Hello and welcome to the Deep Packet Inspection Panel. My name is Jeff T. It is not because I am vain, it's because my name is too long to fit onto the card. To my left, Daniel.
Daniel Baker.
I work for a company in Atlanta that does signal capture, basically communication intercept. Every time you talk to your bank and you get the message, this call may be monitored for quality assurance, it's my stuff recording that. My company also does work for various commercial entities like the London Tube, various airports and whatnot, doing video surveillance and analysis. And we have a division that works with the government and the NSA, the CIA and whatnot for executing warrants and wiretaps and whatnot. That is why I do not say who I work for, because we're not supposed to advertise. Daniel?
Currently, I work for Yahoo. In the past, I've worked with primarily in the Usenet industry, but basically in areas where in the past I've worked with maybe traffic that people don't necessarily want to have looked at, things that I've been on the working in the industry for about 15 years now, from very small all the way up to now, where it's ubiquitous to be on the internet here. Seen many changes. Currently at Yahoo, though, I'm not speaking on their behalf by any means. They would have paid for my plane trip if I had. I'm working a lot with web analytics and a lot of the things that the information we already know about you. And then this is yet another way that people could get information about you. So it's part of my angle here is going to be what motivations that people could have for using this technology, and not necessarily nefarious, but not necessarily in your best interest ways.
All right. Pretty much the whole DPI industry has been growing hugely over the past, but as technology becomes easier and easier to implement to do the analysis necessary, pretty much everybody is jumping on this bandwagon. Companies are using it for their internal networks, for checking mail and whatnot. Governments are using it for intel things. ISPs are using it to see who's sharing files. There's a lot of stuff where RIA gets involved when they're talking to the ISPs and whatnot. A lot of this, they wind up using this to sort of track down exactly who's been sharing what. And if anything ever came to a lawsuit, they'd be using this sort of thing to show that these people were actually sharing files containing what they said they were containing, versus, you know, some idiot who renamed his wedding album, you know, How to Train Your Dragon, was downloading that instead.
However, that does happen.
Yes. Or even the nasty people who are just ripping off complete gibberish off the internet and sticking together to package up with a virus. Obviously, then the folk who are making the equipment also jumping on this bandwagon. Cisco, HP, pretty much everybody who makes networking equipment is adding in this functionality to a greater or larger degree. You're even starting to see some of this on the lower end items now, you know, the things that aren't costing you $10, $20, $30,000 a pop to buy. I haven't played with myself, but Scott, you guys may know, routing the WRT Netgear systems and whatnot. Have they come up with any DPI stuff on those sets yet?
What do you mean, on the routers?
Yeah, with the open source items on there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know offhand, maybe somebody.
Right.
But yeah, that's about it.
I mean, obviously, there's Wireshark.
Yes.
And,
that's been around a while.
Yeah.
Because that solution is so readily available, there may be less incentive to push it.
Do it through the router itself. Okay.
Would one of those routers even have enough really processing capability to do very much?
No.
In and of itself, no, but it could certainly stream it somewhere else to where it did have the capability to do so.
We were talking about a router the other day that will automatically crack web for you.
Thin clients. Yeah, did that show up?
I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, there were there's a thin client that will say, okay, here's a web network. Okay, here's the key, we're connected. That came up in one of the other talks in here yesterday.
Wow.
Or day before.
Yeah. Amazing the things that kids are doing these days. All right. Basically, three main areas are getting into this bandwagon. Enterprise being businesses and whatnot. Larger the business, the more they're going to use it. ISPs, anybody providing network services. I do not know the breakdown between the folk who are doing it commercially, like for businesses and whatnot, like HP's leasing lines, whether the folk who are providing their lines are doing this, or that's more on the local level, you know, Comcast, who are checking on their folk. I know I keep using Comcast because they're the ones who sort of kicked off that whole thing into the media by doing the packet analysis and being told by the FCC, you cannot do this anymore. And they were like, but it's, you know, our networks and we're doing this to provide good service. And then obviously governments being the other one for Intel operations, China and stuff uses for censorship, that sort of thing. All right. Enterprise, IDS and IPS is basically intrusion detection. Think of it this way. There are two main levels of essentially the packet sniffing. The higher level is really at the firewall level. It would be your layer, your, what's it, 5 and 6? Yeah, 5 and 6 of the OSI model. The deep packet are the first four levels. Obviously, nothing does the seventh level because it's simply all hardware. The first is simply seeing where is this going, like you're saying, what kind of traffic is it, and then routing accordingly. The deep packet inspection goes one step further, actually four steps further, and can break down what application is being used, how it's being packaged, where it's being sent, and then even down to what's physically inside the packet, like if it's a Word document, what text is in there, if it's a graphic image, you know, rebuild the graphic, web pages, anything like that. So it gets a lot more invasive, and obviously it gets a lot more processing power. And we were just talking about it before here, where they started now using graphics cards to do a lot of this number crunching, because the whole GPU on the graphics card was designed for nothing but crunching numbers, and they're simply tweaking the code to go in and run in, you know, encryption algorithms and decryption algorithms to try and hack these things. And you know, your average card, what, $50 to $100 now, which is a much cheaper system than having to build a whole PC to do the same thing. And it's a lot easier for folks simply to plug a whole bunch of GPUs into a parallel bus and just let it run wild on these things over here, and you get a phenomenal amount of crunching power for relatively very little cost. And it has been mentioned, I do not know if this actually happened, that source code has been released. You know, so anybody with a couple hundred dollars can go out and design themselves a relatively robust cracking engine if they desire to do so. Companies also use a lot for mail blocking, sending MP3s to each other. I know our company does that. We actually had legitimate MP3s we were sending, and they're like, no, can't be sending that anymore. Media streaming. I mean, how many of you folk use Yahoo at work, or YouTube, or anything that streams video? Oh, you don't count. The one thing I'm not sure about that you're able to help in that there is those horrible Flash movies. Are they affected by that streaming media?
Oh, God, I don't know. Actually, I don't use Yahoo that much at work.
I know there's a big push towards Flash, but I'm not really sure what they cut out. I mean, it really depends on what the company's policies are. I mean, because they can do the traffic shaping, and these technologies have been around to identify and, you know, cut out.
I've been pitched. Our company that actually blocked the sites, like YouTube and others,
Right.
Yeah, you can.
And they go through and they have a firewall we're using, the software package we're using, actually knows all the sites, most of the streaming stuff comes in.
Yes.
It blocks it just at that level, so you even get the Flash plugin and you can't get to the actual.
Yeah, exactly. And you can block based on, there's so many more low-hanging ways to block that, such, you know, based on the file that's being, you know, .swf, .flv, you know, exactly what the content is there, just even at the request level. You have an invisible proxy that your company can have in place. You don't even know, and they're both tracking it, and they can be deciding what you can and cannot get to through this. And of course, there are ways around that, ways to test that. But when it comes down to retrieving the individual pieces on a page, when you want it to pop up, then you may or may not see that. And they could just block it without even going into, you know, true deep packet inspection.
Right.
They can do that at the very top level, just grabbing your request and saying, no.
Yeah, I actually wanted to be a test monkey for my work for a bunch of things. And one of the things they're doing is I was connecting from work to home system. and through SSH, and they started blocking off that port. So I was like, all right, fine, be like that. And
yeah, put it on an alternate port.
Put an alternate port, and they started
checking
for that.
Anyway.
And so then I started bouncing off running like Squid servers and things like that. So I was running through my own proxies at home through the SSH tunnel. Now, as long as that's encrypted, I'm relatively safe. But outside of that encryption, that means that I could stream media through my system that way using the tunnel. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the deep packet inspection, they can put the kibosh on that pretty quickly, simply because they're no longer checking what site is it going to, what connection is going to. They're saying, all right, what is in this mm-hmm. physical packet? And if it's something that matches like a media stream, doesn't matter where it's from, even if it's on an absolutely, even if it's on an internal website, it can still be blocked. And that's where the illegal copying and tracking comes in. Like I said, with our company, we do a lot of work with the government, and we've got software which, unless you're actually in that particular division, you cannot get access to. And a lot of our stuff is built around that because of the proprietary, the propriety of the software itself and its capabilities. So I know we use this sort of thing for our thing to make sure, even if you simply want to learn the product, you know, you have to go get permission, you have to, you know, the whole kit and caboodle, and 9 out of 10 times they say no. and you can't really get around it because they're actually checking that at the packet level, not simply at the connection level. Yeah.
Can you distinguish between SSL and SSH at each packet level?
You should be able
yeah.
to, yes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can break down. The only thing you can, well, you can see that it's there, but the only thing you could not actually see would be physically encrypted traffic.
Well, you wouldn't be able to make out what
right.
it, the content was. You
yes.
would see that it is encrypted. You might even be able to tell what it was encrypted with
yep.
and do some heuristics on that. But you would not be able to determine what it was. But with SSL and as opposed to SSH, for most of the packets there, you would there would be other identifiers that are a lot lower hanging. You know, they're farther up on the chain there so that you could see, you know, the ports that it's going through. And part of the, just to segue again, something related to this is one of the concerns that a previous employer of mine had in the Usenet news industry. And, you know, a concern for the customers was that their ISP or their work may block access to port 119, which is a Usenet port. So naturally they offered access on off ports, including port 80 and such, like, which, you know, the simple blocking would easily, you know, would say, you know, you would say, well, I want my people to be able to get to port 80, so, you know, I'm going to leave this open. I want them to be able to browse the web, but the Usenet thing is going to be different. So with deep packet inspection, then they can look at it and say, hey, look, the protocol in here is different. You know, this is, you know, this is not Usenet. This is Usenet. We don't allow Usenet, or as opposed to web. So then you start to get into encryption and all of that to hide all of this from them. And, you know, going through SSH tunnels or VPNs that are privately run are become your options there.
And SSL is actually tagged as an SSL packet. If you mm-hmm. select a straight Wireshark, it'll come up as SSL at the higher levels.
Yeah.
Not directly related to this panel, but somebody should ask me at Hacking 201 tonight why I have SSHD running on 443 and why I like SOCAP.
A lot of lines on that on deep packet inspection, are they starting to do a lot of the man-in-the-middle firewalls now where at a corporate level you request an HTTPS or a secure encrypted packet, they take it there at the firewall, you know, they relay the data, you know, pass the data through, are they starting to write priority to doing that now?
Mm-hmm.
Really depends who's doing it how. Like I know large media companies, instead of streaming everything over the web, they'll actually run like local proxies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if someone's, let's say, how many of you folk use Pandora or Last FM? All right. for example, they may set up something there. So instead of you've got 30 people all streaming from the internet, they may set up like a local proxy or something. I don't know if it would work with that in particular, but
yeah.
something along those lines. So you actually wind up streaming it on the LAN, and there's only a single feed going out to the internet.
Yeah, it becomes more tricky there. The caching solutions are
yes.
always difficult to get. And the green shirt there?
So. When we're talking about deep packet inspection, take the streaming media example. Assume that it is encrypted over your SSH connection to your house.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still possible through path analysis to determine that there's like a stream there? I mean,
yes.
How good is encryption at shielding a deep packet inspection path?
it's well, good at shielding what the, what's actually in there.
Yeah.
But there are certain certain characteristics. I mean, like most movies are about 700 meg. You know, so if you're streaming about 650 to about 800 meg, they've got a fairly good idea of what you're doing.
Yeah, and the rate that the traffic's coming through,
yep.
bursty patterns that you will see, the difference between if you got you were retrieving your email through there, the way that your client is going to be doing, you know, give me headers, yes, okay, and then picking and choosing, just being able to do that, as you said, the traffic analysis, as opposed to looking at the content, you can figure out what they're doing, and then you could, you know, pick out both what you wanted to, you know, hone in on. You might be able to make a better attack after the fact or even during the fact if you know, hey, this packet is probably a pop mail or this is an IMAP packet. You know, this is a request here. We know that it's encrypted. Hey, let's go ahead and attack it with that. So.
Right. Yeah, if you're streaming like 800 meg across port 25, someone's probably going to be raising eyebrows. you know, they're probably going to walk in. And the two things that I see most often, they probably walk up and you just go like, dude, what the hell are you doing? and the other thing is simply just turn it off. Yeah. Just like block yeah. it, because if it's legitimate, someone will complain. Right. If it's not, no one's going to say anything, and then, all right, he's probably doing something you shouldn't be doing, and he got caught. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, they decide how they're going to proceed from there, because most companies really don't really care, as long as you're not actually abusing the system.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll simply turn it off, or if you start getting into that sort of danger zone and they like you, you know, I could come up and go like, no, you can't be doing this. Like, we're seeing suspicious things and you're starting to hit management reports. Stop doing it.
Yeah, and from my point of view anyway, the tricky part becomes when it's not your employer who's running these things, where that's a fairly legitimate business concern. They don't want you playing Farmville all day. Really, yeah, no, they don't want that. So they have some concerns, or they don't want you sending out their sensitive material. They may want to control things. They have business interests there. It's when your ISP is sitting there and that maybe under the guise of providing better service is watching this for you and looking at, you know, well, what sites are you going to? You know, let's go ahead and we can collect what data is in those really long URLs with all the tags and everything. You know, they could easily already collect that. But if they get into deep packet, they can also start, well, what web pages are you going to? Let's go ahead and scrape out what your interests are. You know, so if it's not SSL, if it's not encrypted there, they can look at all of that. And, you know, in my field is web analytics, you know, people are building up a profile about you or your household, you know, your use here. And then that is very valuable information.
Great.
And, yeah, so it's once they know that, then they could start targeting advertising to you. They no longer are site-based. You know, they aren't locked down to, you know, that you went to their property. Like, you know, so Yahoo has tons of properties. We have lots of information about you because you've gone to sports and cars and all these things, and they're all Yahoo that can be conglomerated. However, your ISP is where where you're starting everything from. So they know that you've gone to all of these very disparate sites and can start to pick out more information about you and either send that information back out with to advertisers when you're making requests, modify your packets, or I can't remember who that was who had started to, I think it was somebody in Canada maybe that was overriding or adding in packets basically to your stream to say, what was it? It was about a year and a half ago or maybe 2 years that they were adding in things which then could become advertising to you. And I think they were saying how much time you had spent online, but they were doing it by overriding the protocol there, by adding things to your web page so it did a pop-up no matter what site you're going to, or it injected something onto your website, this website that you're going to that wasn't them, saying, you know, more information about this. You know, you've used this many hours this month. And it could just as well have said, try Viagra, you know, after you've been going to those sites. And, they know. You know, they have a lot more information about you. And that's really where, you know, from my point of view anyway, where I feel passionate about this is stopping that. You know, you want to be more in control of your information as best you can. And sort of tying back to the Facebook thing from last times, you know, where, you know, you're putting out public information to the public in many ways. People can see this, but there's a ton of information you're leaking every day just by where you're going on the web, what emails you're sending, and all of this.
And right now, at least it's being siloed at Google, which is a big part of your life, or Yahoo, which is a big part of your life, or other, you know, mega IP, you know, content sources. But your ISP still sees all of this. And if they have carte blanche to look at it and do with it as they will, then, yeah, you're owned. You know, that's it.
There's a question over there.
I was just going to say another aspect I don't know if you've been covering is WAN accelerators and wide area network accelerators. They are also using deep packet inspection to increase performance across slow links, which also they'll do man in the middle proxy and man in the middle trust.
See, actually, I think this is one reason that AOL wound up failing, because there's a combination of what you were saying and what he was saying about the man-in-the-middle stuff, was that obviously when everyone's running things over, you know, your 1200 baud modem, you don't really want to be getting everything from the internet every single time. I know AOL would cache a bunch of things, and one of the big complaints was that they were deciding what you got to look at. And that's one of the big reasons that so many people moved away from them as soon as other options became available, was because, you know, Comcast says, hey, AOL decides what you want to watch. Come over here, show whatever you want to watch. Like, you decide.
There's also the unintended behavior of when you're going through a proxy mechanism, like the phone systems are generally IP6 in private space.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have a safe connection to your nice secure web page, and the proxy server assembly decides to service that port to that session to the wrong client.
Yep.
And suddenly you have some 14-year-old with access to your bank account.
Bad juju. So yeah, this is what pretty much ISPs are using. P2P blocking, we've already discussed. We know all about the whole RIA cases. Ironically, some folks were talking about RIA before the thing. From what I've seen, RIA's kind of given up on that now, because they spent something like $140 million to get like $20 million back. they managed to actually collect about $20-25 million or something, but they spent like $140 million in like attorney fees and whatnot to get that $20 million.
There's a business plan.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's their standard business plan.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's attorneys who are going, dude, you can't let this happen. You're losing money. You need to pay us more so we can make sure this doesn't happen.
Yeah. Think of the records.
Yeah. All right, QoS. This is becoming more important these days with VoIP. With VoIP becoming as important as it is, and with it becoming as widespread as it is, pretty much if you make a phone call these days, you're using VoIP at some point. Doesn't matter what phone you're using, where, you know, barring it being your Heinz tin of beans linked by a piece of string to your brother's room, you're probably going to be hitting a VoIP network at some point. Depending on how they've got that stuff set up, QoS can become extremely, extremely important there. VoIP is pretty flexible, and it's designed to take into account that you're going to be losing certain amounts of data. Packets are broken up there into like 20 millisecond blocks, and this whole protocol to what they're using is very happy to certainly lose a good number of blocks because it can rebuild it from what's left. But obviously, you start losing too many blocks, your calls start dropping. Worse, you start losing your signaling data, your RTP packets and stuff don't get through. They just start getting transposed. You know, you make a call to your mother, you want to speak to the president's private line. Bad things can happen with that. With what I do on the commercial side, that's probably one of the biggest problems we see, is our recorders will record whatever voice comes across that IP, and we record that happily. But a lot of times we can't link it to anything because we never received the RTP packets that said this call was for this particular agent or on this phone number or something like that. So we can get the client to go listen to the voice, but there's nothing linking to a particular agent as such. We know there's a call, but that's all.
And that becomes even more difficult whenever you start splitting up your RTP packets out of your data stream and sending them separately.
Yes. Well, on our side, we pretty much we can't force this, but we strongly suggest that the only thing coming across those NIC cards for that is the voice data. We actually ask that they split off and run the network stuff on one NIC card, and however many VLANs they're using for their voice, we want nothing on that card at all that is not SIP or RTP or whatever they're using for that DMS, however. if it's on there, we do a packet. We say we're receiving extraneous information. We need you to filter it out. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't, but it makes it much easier when they can, because you've simply got that much more bandwidth for your packets. Yeah.
Could you be able to use void packets so that you can tag other packets as void packets and have different traffic go through with the void tagging?
You could. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're doing something like meaconing and you're taking it and actually rewriting the packet, you can make it anything you want.
Yeah, so long as on the other side it understands what to decrypt it as, you know, what it's going to get, that really it's a, use NAT over VoIP, you know, streaming, you know, where it looks like this. It, you know, what you're really getting is different data. And I think that's one of the problems that they have with Skype, is that by default, it's, I'm not a big Skype user, it's not my expertise, so maybe somebody else can dive in, but Skype is encrypted, and they don't really know what's being channeled over it. And they can, you know, it's a nice, easy, you know, low-hanging go-to for, you know, encrypted traffic that they expect it to be big. And I think that there are some new attacks on it that, again, went to the, you know, does this really look like Skype traffic, you know, so that they could at least tell, are you really using it like this? But once again, once you start bundling, you have, you know, packets over some other thing, so that you have, you know, voice over IP. You know, it's, you can do something else over, you know, your VoIP package, you know, these or your SIP packets, so it looks like something else, so long as you have a large enough data field in there and the other end knows what to do when it receives this and can decrypt it. So
And I can tell you that whether Skype encrypts it, if Vonage does or not, I can tell you that by default most companies do not encrypt it. Which
yeah,
means
I think Skype is the one that's well known for it. I don't think that Vonage does.
You're saying from an enterprise standpoint,
yes, like
most companies do not encrypt their RTP within their buildings.
Or no, the RTP or the SIP.
Somewhere. We'll have to talk after, but I will also validate what he's saying on that.
Because a lot of times when we're troubleshooting stuff, we just ask them for Wirepack, a Wireshark capture, and Wireshark's actually got a thing built into rebuild voice streams. And you simply say right-click, rebuild, and bang, you've got the audio.
Yeah, Wireshark is pretty powerful.
Yes.
And if you have the certificate, you can even decrypt the packet, then reconstruct it.
Yeah. Obviously, advertising. Companies love advertising. That's why if you're browsing things, you will say, hey, there are hot, naked, horny chicks in Atlanta waiting for you rather than North Carolina.
Yeah. Though again, a lot of that is going to be just based on the fact that they know where you are. That advertising network already knows where you are. It's the at the deep packet level, advantage comes in that your ISP now they can feel that they own you there, as opposed to, you know, knowing that much information. You know, it could be because on Facebook you viewed an ad and Facebook leaked, you know, put in what your zip code was. And then later on, that same advertising company has a cookie that has been set on your machine, or thanks to Flash, forever on your machine. Then they will know that information, you know, ongoing. Now, when your ISP knows this and has, you know, can build up this perfect picture about you because they know everywhere that you've gone, they know all the silly things, you know. Sites that you go to, they know, you know, the serious places, they know your email, they know, you know, all your M's, you know, they know everything that's gone through here, and they've built up a picture of you, or at least your household, then this is very powerful for advertising as sort of the holy grail of, and it seems like it'd be information overload, but, you know, I'm new at Yahoo. I've been working there for close to a year now, and when I came in, I said, oh my God, they know all of this about me, you know, this is, you know, not that I can look up my profile, but it's like, yeah, I never really thought about that. And so for ad targeting, it becomes, you know, very powerful, and that's where the money is. You know, that's where, you know, you could sell ads that people are likely to actually click on, that, you know, you've been looking at minivans and car seats, and now, you know, a few months later, they're going to put up the formula ads for you. And it's like, oh yeah, that actually looks good, you know, so they know where you're going from this. They can figure this out. And it's all behavioral targeting. And if your ISP's got it, hey, you know, you have no way to easily hide all of your traffic from them short of going through some third-party VPN, which there are places out there that are now offering it.
And if your ISP has it, someone else has it too.
Exactly.
Because even though, and they will swear, and it'll be in your contract that this information will be kept private, there is always, always, always something about we reserve the right to check as partners and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that partner's opened up pretty much everything. Facebook is the prime example of this, because every developer on Facebook, and as far as I know, you can pretty much say, I'm a 12-year-old and I write programs, I want to be a developer, and they say, mm-hmm. Lock yourself out. They have access to your profile.
Well, and as much as you sign up for their application and
yes.
you have your privacy settings wrong, but you can let a lot loose without knowing it. And worse, if your friend signs up for that, then they could have your information.
It's and that's why I do not have any applications with Facebook, and I use a fake name. Hey, I don't even have my mother on there. All right, law enforcement. No ISP or telecom company in this country can operate legally and without being subject to this. They are required by state and federal law that if someone serves them a warrant, they have to provide information. Again, this is where RIA got a huge slap from the public, because they would go up to an ISP and go, someone's sharing our files, give us this information. The ISP would go, knock yourself out, here's the information. We've got the IP, we want the person's name, and they're like, all right, go for it.
Yeah.
Obviously, RIA had no warrant or anything along those lines for that information. So they got yelled at by press and media and everything else on that there. And I know that there have been some cases when a warrant has been issued that the company has fought back for various reasons, like it's maybe too broad. And unfortunately, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't speak to this on that level, but if Chris was here, he could. But anecdotally, I know that they've served something that says, all right, we need to get information because your customers are downloading. And the ISP's like, no, mm-hmm. you need to be more specific than this over here. And their lawyers will then go fight those in court, for on your behalf.
Verizon was big on that 5 years ago or so, and other companies have stepped forward. But then again, you also get the ones which are just all too happy to turn it over, or who, it's Time Warner AOL. They already sort of, they're crossing the lines there. They internally, they may or may not have protections for you or really care. They already know who you are based on your IP address. I mean, they can go back to the corporate thing. They aren't going across to somebody else. So when interests start to merge like that, when you get big media and your ISP are one and the same, then in this case you have less protection.
All right. Then contract compliance. Depending on what you've got with who, this really doesn't affect most folk at the consumer level, unless you have an obscene amount of money to spend on huge contracts. More for businesses and whatnot. If they're leasing certain amounts of bandwidth, they expect that amount of bandwidth. So folk, in that case, you really can't do much about it as the individual, because if your company is with Verizon and they're providing their WAN data, and they're going like, you guys are like maxing out your information every month, you're just pulling your network flat. At that point, then the company will say, knock yourself out, go find out why this is happening. And because of who you're working for, you pretty much lose all right to what's being sent across there, because you're using company equipment. And at that point, they use a lot of DPI to say, all right, you've got folks streaming media, there's moving movies around, that type of thing. And they may or may not do it themselves based on what the company tells them. But the company probably come down and, again, dude, what are you doing?
Are you talking about ISP hearing?
Yes, on the ISP side, because if you're leasing lines, if I'm paying you $500,000 a month for X amount of bandwidth, I bloody well want that amount of bandwidth. And if someone else is coming up and going like, we can't get these documents, we need to the Hong Kong office because, it keeps timing out, company go to the ISP and going to say, what's going on? I'm spending you a lot of money to get this over here, and I'm not getting this. And the ISP will then start doing analysis at various levels and go, all right, well, the reason you're not doing this is because you're using up all your bandwidth streaming, someone's running a media server over there and you guys are sharing files across with Russia. Or you've got a, you've got a bot network running on your internet or something, intranet. Yes, exactly.
A public service.
Governments use this a lot as well, obviously. China and North Korea use it for monitoring who gets to read what in their countries.
Well, and more so also, and who's saying what, such as all the Saudi Arabia and the BlackBerry encryption.
Yes.
Where it's like, if you're going to be using this here, if you want to operate here, we need to be able to snoop on your traffic. Thank you, Hina. this is.
And United Arab Emirates.
Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, within the U.S., campaign and telecom government, no. You need to give us a warrant on the server here. We are not just opening up our entire network to you. they can, but what they can do with it after the fact is up for grabs. If they're simply phishing and they run across something, it'll likely get thrown out because like you had no probable cause to be searching for the information in the first place. You're protected under the Fourth Amendment, reasonable search and seizure.
Unless it's terrorism, in which case. if it's a domestic terrorism thing, then you're SOL. Yeah.
But there are exceptions to it, obviously, but for the most part, if they're simply fishing for that, they won't do anything with it. What they will do is make a note and start telling people to go search for other evidence based on this. And what they found you over there will probably never get mentioned. Because they've got that wonderful little clause of it's national security, we can't tell you where we got the initial source from. It was an anonymous tip.
And then they'll just do it through the proper legal means.
Exactly. And when they actually present the case, that's where it'll all be laid out nicely, everything legal and done like that, even though they may have initially got it from just a random search. The good side is that, for the most part, we do not have that infrastructure yet. The technology is not there for them to simply scan everything and see what they find. It's getting there, especially with things like those GPUs running in parallel now. They're getting closer, and obviously the government's running things much faster than what you can get on the commercial level, mm-hmm. but we're not quite to that point yet that they can simply scan everything and see what they find. And for the most part, the government itself doesn't care if you're streaming movies. I mean, they just really don't care. Or if you've got sharing out music, they may tell your local folk if you're like absolutely slamming the entire neighborhood, go have a look at this person. But for the most part, they're just going to ignore it. NSA, I can almost guarantee you're simply going to ignore it because they don't care. They just have the resources to go sit and run down, a 10-year-old is busy sharing his, iCarly files.
Well, and yeah, no, neither should they be doing so.
Right.
One thing about this is that there are a lot of other, from a government point of view, at least here in the U.S., that there are a lot of other tools that they will fall back on, such as when I was working at Usenet service providers, we would get subpoenas frequently for various things. People had posted blah to this news group, and we want to know who it is. And in some cases, they did go fishing. We want everybody who has posted from your service to this news group. And it's like, no, sorry. That's phishing. We'd send it back. No, we can't really fill that. But otherwise, they would have enough information. But what I generally saw was that what they were asking about were old posts. This was not up to date. And if they already knew who it was, because they knew your IP, because they had scanned it off the net, they wouldn't be coming to us for it, period. Much less, giving us a really poor data to go from, hopefully, a poor fax with a message ID in it, and it's, is that a 1 or a 0, one or L, or a, a lot of these things, they're using, they may have at the NSA level, looking for things such as, when you see the jokes of, and shout out to our friends in the NSA, or domestic spying, or what have you, and the code words of, bomb, and blah, and blah, and blah, all of these things, that's really where you're probably going to see things where they care, but otherwise, at the local level, for law enforcement, then you're going to be dealing with things where they're going to get a tip, they might be watching a news group, they're going to be looking, or watching traffic on a forum, and they're going to have to go through it the old-fashioned way and go to the ISP, and the ISP is going to have to look up who had this IP address at this time, and look up the account, give that back, and go through the subpoena process. So deep packet inspection, at the moment anyway, isn't something where they can be a totalitarian state. Quite.
Yeah. Here at least, there are places where it is. China, Saudi Arabia, UAE, that kind of place. They've got no problem saying, if you post something, we will be reading it. Iran, they're bloggers. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, you posting up Mohammed, we're shutting down Facebook access. Awesome. Governments also do a lot of this for signal intelligence, communication, and there's two main groups for this over here, communication intelligence and electronics intelligence. The difference is your comm-ent is usually human-based in some way, your ELINT is not. The easiest way to differentiate between the two would be comm-ent would be us having a conversation. We have speech analytics software that'll actually go through and like on, if they're running it like at airports and whatnot, if someone calls in a bomb threat, that call is automatically recorded and people automatically start getting emails that says, this call is a trigger, go pay attention to this call, we have a flag on this. The ELINT stuff is more for just straight electronic communications, not so much on the internet, a lot of it does go through the internet eventually, but most of that's running on like SIPRNet with the DoD secured network, so not so much there. But if for whatever reason it does come out into the public, they can do that. ELINT would be things like analyzing radar signatures. They see that there is a signal going on there, and they can go, all right, based on the characteristics, we know it's a radar signal. We know it's coming from this type of equipment, this, you know, make and model, and it's most likely being used by this government. So yeah, we don't really get much of that because most of that doesn't go across the internet as such, but NSA and the military and stuff will be using DPI to spy on enemy communications for the same way. I know in World War II, I don't remember his name, one of the Japanese admirals actually assassinated because someone let slip who it was and where they were going at a particular time. And they intercepted that, they found out who it was, and they took him out. And then finally, obviously, law enforcement, which is simply the straight, this person, you know, has been reported as having been to a training camp in Afghanistan. We need to start watching him. Who does he talk to? You know, who is he meeting? That sort of thing. And then we'd work with whoever's involved with the case and like tap the phones, you know, Wi-Fi signals, that sort of thing. The advantage of with how it works now, especially over VoIP, is that in the olden days when you had the TDM systems, which are like the old phones, physical switches, you actually go sit somewhere physical and plug in. Now all that happens is you send one of your techs on site and you tell them to simply reroute the packets to an IP address somewhere. You know, so if you go into like AT&T New York, they simply stream the data from there, encrypted to NSA headquarters for analysis there. A lot of time that's done is simply because some the toys aren't always practical to get out into the field, and all they really need is the data. And with it being encrypted and whatnot, no one else is going to get the data. And once they have it, they can do with it whatever they want to. So those are the main ones for the government. All right, pros and cons for deep packet analysis are go all over the place. Pros, I personally like VoIP. I like being able to speak clearly and concisely. I'm rather happy that someone is paying attention to QoS on that. Again, better network management. If focus streaming media across your company LAN and you can't get your email, I want someone to be able to go and tell the folk, stop sharing files, we need to be doing work. And then, like these guys with the target advertising.
I don't know if I'd put that under a pro myself, even though I work for a company who does. I don't like generic ads, but then again, I don't like companies knowing quite so much about me and building profiles. I don't know that I would put that under a pro. It's more the targeted advertising means that they have developed, you know, you're the target. They've developed a profile on you or your household, and that may or may not be correct, and these things end up in databases passed around, and you know, you went and looked on a site about, say you looked up depression on WebMD, and now suddenly you're getting ads for depression meds. And you know, where does this end? You know, when they can track this back to you, you know, if they can't identify it to you, then you know, now your employer is going to get it. You know, your insurance rate's going to go up. You know, at what point does this information go? So you know, the better way to avoid all of that, from my point of view, is you know, if they don't have the information to start with, if they don't feel that they have the right to go in there and tamper and pull this out, you know, especially at the ISP level, then you know, just because you're going over their networks, then you know, it's more, it improves our privacy, you know, our rights, whether we're going to get a targeted ad or not. You know, I'm running ad blocker, I'm not going to get an ad. So it's, you know, that I wouldn't put it under pros.
are obviously cons, lack of privacy. The more they know about you, the worse it is for you. And this actually goes beyond just the DPI stuff. I know in California, I don't know if both parties did it or if just one party did it, but they basically partnered with the credit card companies, and they got lists and lists of what people have been buying. So they knew how to, when they were starting to campaign for their folk, they knew how to stage those campaigns based on what people have been buying off their credit card receipts. And this wasn't like, oh, we see trending. This is like, here is 3,000 credit card receipts. So you guys can go through and actually see who was buying what. You're not getting amalgamated information here. You're getting the raw data.
And once you start using loyalty cards and all of that and giving out your email address, now your email address can be used to sync you up with, you know, sync up this terrestrial data where you don't even think about the fact that, you know, what you just bought in the store now could end up affecting what advertising you're going to see, much in the same way,
right,
that, you know, the companies do buy this. They do, you know, cross-pollinate there. So that's, you know, the information is out there, and unfortunately it's a signal that you know, we might want to stop.
Use cash. Cash is good. Cons, yeah.
How much is the payoff really with deep package inspection with QoS as opposed to stateful package inspection?
For the most part, stateful package inspection is more than enough. The QoS stuff is more for when folks are trying to get clever. And like he was mentioning, like try and essentially disguise what's going on there. If someone is going to the effort of disguising packets at that level, odds are one of two things are happening. Either they're doing something very, very, very bad, like terrorism, or they're going to be doing a huge amount of data that they don't want traced, which may be just, you know, again, file sharing that they don't want someone to come back and sue them. Either way, it's going to wind up being bad. But yeah, for the most part, stateful is more than enough.
Yeah, bad for the person who owns the network, you know, just in that sense, at least.
Yeah.
Not necessarily illegal, but they don't want to, you know, Bob in accounting sitting there setting up streaming servers and making it look like it's going over the company VoIP and thus getting in under the wire of the traffic shaping or proxy black holes and so forth that they may have to keep him from doing that otherwise.
Yeah, for example, like me streaming over the SSH connection. When they shut that down, I sometimes use support 80, which is like always open. Now, fortunately, I behaved myself, and we had policies that allowed us to do what I wanted to do, but I didn't want them browsing what websites I was browsing, so that's why I was using that. But in that case, they'd be using DPI at that point to sit and trace down what's going through there. If it's encrypted, they can't see the packet, the actual payload, but they can still get characteristics off of that based on, you know, size of the packets, how many are coming through.
They can tell whether you're at the streaming site watching
videos. Right. Right. So that's your DPI come through on that there. Evidence, if you're being bad, DPI is very useful for evidence. This can be at the level of terrorism. It could be at the level of you cheating on your wife or your girlfriend. I don't know how legal this was. Actually, I'm pretty sure it would be completely illegal. But it really wouldn't be hard for someone to plug into your connection point outside the house and you know, capture packets off of there, some private investigator, because he does not have to build a case. All he has to do is prove to his client that you are cheating on her or she's cheating on you or something.
Kind of depends on if the network is set to permit QoS or not. It can be, you know, a pain to try and run Wireshark and gather something like
right.
that if you don't have an older router.
Yep. And even stuff, I mean, you can buy stuff off the shelf now that's like just freaky scary. Like little either USB or PS2 connections where you simply plug it in and it's essentially a key logger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hardware based one, which means you can't really trace it. And at the end of the day, a guy walks by, unplugs it again, and you go, oh, someone kicked out my keyboard cable. And they walk away with 2 or 3 days worth of data of everything you've been typing in. And obviously, you don't need DPI for that because that's all be clear text. Mm-hmm. But, things like that, it's becoming easier and easier for folks to get the information they need to do various levels of analysis on it.
Yeah. So there are a lot of ways to go around the need for DPI, you know, to get the same information. In fact, both for private investigators and for the government, that if they really want to track your traffic and all of that, that a common thing is to get you to download a Trojan and install it, much like you probably have already. You know, it'll compete with all the other ones, mm-hmm. and it will sit there, and it will be looking at your material. It will be taking the screenshots. It will be gathering all the evidence that they need on there, and you have put it through. And I've heard of cases from friends of mine and who are closer in the ISP industry about cases, you know, where their software was not letting the person download it. Their default thing, you know, coming through their web proxies, it detected this is a Trojan, and the government finally, I forget which bureau it was, and may not have been known, but
it was Carnivore, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but they came through. It was that they said you need to allow this one download to work, please. You know, you let it through to this guy. We're trying to do this. Don't ask, you know, but we need to get this through. They did, you know, opened up a hole in their virus scanning in order to let this through. As they were cooperating with the government, but otherwise their little, you know. Yeah, so this is another way. There are plenty of other ways to get at this information, but the DPI has such far-reaching ramifications, in my opinion, that, you know, we could get many of the pros out of, you know, from other means. The cons are still out there, but, you know, why give them, you know, carte blanche to just gather all this information here? Why, you know, if we could cut this off, the final bit here, the tiered access, also you could look at is the network neutrality, is where, again, from one of my past employers' interests was they didn't want an ISP to say, hey, that Usenet traffic is kind of big and bloaty. We would rather, we want that to be slower than, say, going to websites and all of that. And then it, you know, that expands into going to what websites and so forth. If you take on network neutrality from the don't allow deep packet inspection, they don't have this information, or it's a lot easier, it's a lot more trivial for the consumer to hide that information. I'm going to go to a different port, and unless you have deep packet inspection on there, you don't know what protocol I'm running over this. It's just TCP/IP. You know, it's a protocol. You know, so once the DPI gets in there, then they can more easily start doing shaping of traffic based on what the actual content is, and then you have to up your game and get encryption involved and so forth, and tunneling, VPNs. So that can, you know, this is why I, you know, my stance here is DPI. You know, it's all cons. You know, pretty much. You know, the pros are, you know, more on an individual network level. You know, for the firewalls and so forth at a company level, perhaps. But once it gets out onto the internet, once it's your ISP doing this, you know, somebody who you may or may not even have a choice to go into another market. You may not have another viable alternative for broadband in your area due to the way that the markets are segmented. And yes, then once they can do this, then yeah, you're owned, and they would love to be able to, you know, on so many levels.
You had a question?
My question was not so much along the lines of network management, mm-hmm. or evil government or evil corporations, but what about deep packet inspection in terms of identity theft?
Absolutely.
How do you protect against it?
You can't really. Encryption, that's about it.
At what level are you worried about someone snooping your packets in order to gather your sensitive information when you're uploading it?
For the purpose of replacing.
So like a man in the middle attack, or I guess, yeah, I think that they would have to have access to something. I mean, if you cut out governments and so forth, then that would really involve somebody, as you know, it'd get back into using Trojans or something like that, where you already have that, and they wouldn't even need, they've already inserted some other way to yeah, exactly. You know, instead of, because the deep packet inspection means that they would, if they could intercept all of your traffic and then run Wireshark, you know, if they're on your network, you know, they're already inside your house, you know, then, pardon?
Wireless LANs would be a great way to attack. Like, if I wanted to do that this gentleman, mm-hmm. I would just park my car outside
and start gathering traffic, yeah.
Wireless network, yep. Which I've got maybe like a 40% chance.
Yeah.
And then,
actually, if you drive through a neighborhood, I can relatively certain guarantee you get a close to half of the folk in any given network are probably running unsecured.
Not out in California. I was really annoyed with that. So. Yeah.
Some neighborhoods.
when they were installed to our wireless networks, every one of them was secure.
Yeah, and a lot of the things now come where it's already, it has a key, you know, it's written on the device, you know, the two-wire things that AT&T gives out or like that. So it's easy enough for the consumer. They don't have to set their web key. It's there. No, you can't change your web, you know, and...
It's okay because they're only using web.
Once it starts tonight, I'm going to walk out 20, 30 seconds.
And the reason
I
was
Oh, well, no, okay, that's something different. If you're targeting someone, they're screwed.
Okay.
Yeah, once you can get there, yeah, if you could pick up their packets through wire, you know, over the wire, one way or the other, then. Oh, yeah, yeah. And once you have, unless it's encrypted.
No, if you're actually
trying well
to get hold of a particular person, there's really very little I can do to actually stop that eventually.
Mm-hmm.
All of this over here is largely stopping folk who are going what's available.
Yeah, the phishing expeditions or the behavioral targeting on a wide scope and so forth. That fellow in the back there.
And then...
Yeah, I think that...
Yes, campaign to your legislator.
Yeah.
So only thing that'll happen.
Yeah, though then you have to deal with the fact that you have less money than they do. But
yes.
You know, but if you don't try it, then they don't find out that, you know, they're.
Are you wanting to stop the DPI, or are you wanting to stop the use of certain information?
Yeah.
I mean, are you wanting to stop FOSS, or are you wanting to stop network management?
Well, it'd be more of a disallowing DPI for certain uses, you know, for, you know, on this grand scale, that just because.
Well, the thing is, most of this other stuff over here
on
the pro side can be done other ways.
Yeah.
DPI is just usually an easy way to do it, and they can justify using DPI to do this, which then gives them access to all the other things.
So if you at least, if there are laws in place, you know, that say, you know, no, it cannot be used for these things, that is an invasion of privacy. This is overstepping. You're not doing anything to improve the quality of service here when you're recording this information, when you're injecting, you know, ads based on the demographics that now you have, you know, or the behavioral information that you've already, you know, now taken from us. That's excessive. You know, that's abuse of this. The technology, you know, not to outlaw technology. I mean, that's kind of a silly idea anyway. But to outlaw, you know, certain uses or, you know, to get the FCC in there. So they say, yeah, like they did before, say, no, you can't do this. No, you can't just sit there and watch every packet that comes across and identify these people and then just, you know, pawn it off to the RIA or so forth.
Yeah. Hang on, one thing. Okay. And about your talking to your legislator, unfortunately, that has not a grassroots level because, like you say, the politicians are two things, money and votes. On the individual level, we can't compete with the money. On even on the individual level, they don't really care about your particular vote. But if you can get a block together of a big enough people, they will then pay attention to you over the money once you hit a certain threshold. Because no matter how much money they have, if they don't have the votes, the money's useless to them.
Yeah. Right. Not to mention, if they hear from enough people, then it must be, you know, they may have never heard of deep packet inspection, and, you know, the companies out there are probably happy with this. If they start to hear from people like, well, what is this thing that they don't like, you know, and it's like it was in their morning briefing a couple of times, we've received 1,000 more letters about this, then it comes up that AT&T, Comcast, whomever is coming through and saying, we don't want any legislation about this, and they're like, wait, didn't some of my constituents say this? And it's like, how much do they hear from their constituents, really? You know, so it's a squeaky wheel.
And you know, one thing on that there, because I've worked with politicians, if you do form letters, if you get every person in that person's voting block to sign your form letter, it'll count as one incident. Have them write individual letters, because that will then show that, it shows two things. One, the individual voter cares about this issue. They're not simply blindly signing something.
Yeah. And send real mail, not form email.
And two, it tells them that, you know, I should actually, those are the two things there. First one is that individuals are caring about this, and two, they're paying personal attention to it by sitting down and actually penning something,
mm-hmm.
versus simply, you know, walking around thinking, hey, sign my signature. For, in effect, I mean, they'll go and say, oh, we got 5,000 votes that did this, but it'll be logged as one complaint. If they get 5,000 individual letters, it gets registered as 5,000 complaints. You get a lot more traction doing it on an individual basis than you do simply signing things. The only time that kind of differs is when you've actually got a lobbying group behind you.
That's the other thing, is you can locate groups about this. I know that there's one out of, a former employer of mine who ran giganews.com, which is also very data warehouse and some other things, a Viper VPN, but they actually have a lobbyist that they send out, and they are one of the few people who are trying to, they're very big on, stopping DPI as a way to stop network neutrality, or help uphold network neutrality, because if they can't look at your packets at that level, then, it's harder for them to discriminate that way, in the terms of if they can't discriminate as to what the traffic is, they cannot discriminate against the levels of it so well. If we could
get a question here,
a fellow here in the middle.
My question is about IPv6. Have you guys heard anything about DPI in reference to that? I know that there's supposed to be some additional security measures put into IP version 6.
They're talking about the VPN that's automatic.
Well, the biggest thing of IPv6 is simply making more address space available. So that's its primary focus.
Sure.
Adding things onto that may or may not be useful depending on how long it takes for someone to break it. It could be a good thing, and again, like anything else, it's depending on how many people are actually using it. For example, your ISP may choose not to use it specifically because they want the data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you are doing it yourself, you have to know how to do that. It could work. It's really dependent on what folk do with it. I mean, IPv4, well, I actually can't. It's largely dependent on how it's used. The capability will be there to help, but it will not be a sort of fixed solution for the whole thing.
I mean, the only difference is IPsec was written directly into the IPv6 standard, and you're much more likely to have end-to-end connectivity with IPv6 so that all forms of IPsec can be used. But other than that, it's just another form of IP.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd like to add to your personal experience, I'll ask you, to the pro side, is that when you start getting traffic network flows, aggregate flows, so I don't know, around 3 to 4 terabits a second, that you're going to have a mechanism at the hardware level and probably DPAC inspection to be able to manage that kind of environment.
What would be the information that they would be pulling out that would give them any sort of advantage, unless they were looking for oddities such as someone streaming YouTube over VoIP, which.
That's what you expect.
But that would seem to be such an edge case that if it becomes mainstream, then that's another problem already. That these are people cheating in order to get around something else.
I
so.
Good deal.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's there are various tools for it, and at different levels, it's what are they pulling out of there, what are they storing, what are they keeping?
I've been pitched solutions in that space, and there are interest in us for that space because of the issues we have.
Okay. I think
we're about out of time.
Yeah.
Based on this final thing, do you guys have any questions? I mean, the final slide's fairly self-explanatory. I do think DPI is here to stay. The only question is what level it will be used.
Mm-hmm.
Governments will not give it up simply because of the intelligence and the law enforcement stuff. How much your ISP and stuff can use will depend largely on you as individual voters and stuff, talking to your Congress folk and going, here's what I want, and if you do not do this, I will not vote for you again. And again, at the individual level, it sucks to say it, but they really don't care about your single vote. It's going to have to be a case of folks getting out there together and saying, all right, we want you to do this rather than I want you to do this. And whoever's got the more we's in the long run will win. The only good thing about that is that there is that threshold which is going to vary from person to person as to eventually the we's will outweigh the money. Because all the men in the world won't get you a vote if 50% of your constituency are saying, we will not vote for you. Because again, you've got voters, you've got registered voters, and you've got the folk who actually come out to vote. That's why you look at the political parties. Their ads are not targeted at their base votes. They're targeted at the swing votes. Base votes will vote for them no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, the other lesson perhaps to carry away from all of this is use crypto. There's so many different reasons that we've discussed that go beyond DPI, you know, short of someone being on, you know, at your computer and plugging in a keystroke capture device, then, you know, once your traffic is encrypted, then you're already, you know, you're protected on a much broader scale here. Whether or not then they can, you know, they may turn around and say, well, we're going to discriminate against all of your encrypted traffic. Well, that's yet to be seen, but at least that's a way that you can protect yourself, the way that you can make it less valuable to do ill with this. And if it happens to undermine, you know, QoS and so forth of this, well, you know, yeah, you know, so that's protecting yourself. So
what would you recommend for encryption that would either, you know, quickly kill your founder?
A lot of it, I mean, you end up with situations where it's like, are you going to, you know, do you want to use a VPN, which I use one for work whenever I'm connected remotely, or, and it's, they require it. I'm not getting onto the work network without it, but I definitely know a difference when I'm using it, you know, that, yeah, I'm just not getting all the throughput that I ought to. But this is, it's a trade-off, and depending on how big your broadband is to start with, you know, you may not notice it. Your hardware, you know, doing the encryption.
In general, I recommend commercial VPN for streaming or for banks. It's like trusted, not like some off use in a big company that doesn't want to get sued, because exit points are not as much for attack. So use a VPN that you can trust, but that's what I use for the bulk of my traffic.
Mm-hmm.
But for general web browsing, you can use Tor, which is free, endorsed by the Electronic Freedom Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Tor is a really good program to start with.
Well, anybody can be sued. It's, you know, whether or not it's going to be, you know, fruitful for them to do so, and whether or not you're going to have a defense that I don't know what's going over my Tor, you know, node here. Yeah. So.
The EFF has written a standard Tor relay letter, so if you're running a Tor relay, you basically have like a stance defense, and it's what it's worth. Nobody's ever got after Tor node, but it won't happen.
Now, you see, Tor has the advantage not so much of encryption, but simply making so many possible targets, it's not feasible to go after them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so widespread, there's simply no feasible way for a government or a private company or whoever to deal with all the hassles of all the different countries it may be going through. Because all, you know, if you're going through Russia, you have to deal with one set of copyright laws. If you're going through Japan, a second set, Australia, a third set, every country adds on there. And essentially, they've got to start from scratch every time. The governments themselves not come together and said, all right, we're going to work together on this, because they all want to maintain their autonomy on how to decide what they want to do. And as soon as someone says, all right, we need to set a standard, and someone disagrees with it, they're going to simply say, we're not going to do that. There are certain things which they will agree on, but a lot of times, especially on the law enforcement, because you don't just have to do... it's not just a case of following the trail. And it's folk agreeing that yes, it's necessary, because pretty much all the governments do agree it's necessary. But actually getting through all their legal individual hurdles and the expense that it takes to hire lawyers within those countries to navigate those hurdles for them. So it's simply a case of attrition. You know, most folks just can't even governments can't afford that much overhead.
So is this like the new version of saying I have an open Wi-Fi point?
No, because that's actually coming under some scrutiny, and most folk are going like, you're just a dumbass, there's no excuse anymore. 5 years ago, yes, because most folk didn't know about it. It's becoming pop culture enough now that it says, I don't know if there's a reasonable level, yet again, I'm not a lawyer, but it's getting close to that point that it's like, if you're running wireless, you should know simply because of what's in the media that this is a danger point.
Yeah, I don't know about the responsibility. That again, I don't know that there's any case law for that.
There
It'd be very interesting to find out how that
there
falls.
There isn't yet, but it's heading in that direction.
Yeah. This question came up in an earlier panel in this room.
Yeah.
And the response was that courts have been very careful to not rule on that.
Yeah, especially in the U.S.
Set that precedent.
Yeah. With as much as the U.S. relies on stare decisis, which is pretty much what has gone before will be used again. Courts tend to be hesitant on that kind of thing simply because once you open up something that is that general, you get hammered from all sides because everyone will be citing that case then.
Yeah, what else can you say that, you either are allowed because you just happen to leave it unlocked or or that you can't because of this, where it was a legitimate thing, somebody gets shot with your gun, and what level are you legally obligated to have had your gun locked away, again, and what level are you legally obligated to have your Wi-Fi encrypted, secured, and so forth.
And especially something, even inference, like if someone's downloading child porn through your server or through your Wi-Fi point, even if you know nothing about it, your name will come out. And especially in cases like that, if your name is linked to that, you're pretty much toast. Mm-hmm. Even if you're absolutely and unequivocally absolved of it, no one's going to care.
Yeah.
They will say, oh yeah, you were the guy who says you're the child porn. Yeah, we don't want you.
Yeah.
So secure your Wi-Fi, hide your SSID, use magic, don't
drink. All of the above, yeah.
Kind of a chance.
Yeah, unless somebody is targeting you again, it's one set.
If someone's actually after you, you're...
If someone wants your stuff bad enough, they'll kick down your damn door when you're not.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yeah.
Or surreptitiously come in and, yeah. I guess all the cool kids are bump keying now, so.
Yeah.
All right, no other questions? All right, well, folks, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you. Great questions.